Oral History. I'm Gwendolyn Johnson, and I'm interviewing Ms. Zella Marie Jackson of 43 Smith Street, Bridgeport, Connecticut, on Monday, October 10th, 1983. Mrs. Jackson, will you tell me something about your early childhood?
My early childhood was spent in a place called Newbern, North Carolina. Newbern is a very famous place locally. It was discovered by Baron de Graffenreid from Sweden, and the capital of Sweden is Bern. And just fortunately and incidentally, I visited that place when I went to Europe, not knowing I was going there, but it's one of the places we passed by, and I was just dumbfounded when I found out I was in Bern, Switzerland.
Oh, I bet you were.
Because I had heard so much about it. And then Signet for North Carolina is Three Bears. Oh. Is the bear.
Yes.
You know. Mm-hmm. And they had them all over Switzerland.
See? Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting.
And
when did you go to New York? You told me you went to New York.
My mother took me to Philadelphia first. Mm. I was around 4 years old, 3 or 4 years old. We stayed there, I imagine, until I was around 5 or 6 years old, because I wasn't in school. Then we went back to Newbern, North Carolina, and we stayed there until I guess I was 9. And then we came back to New York City again.
I didn't establish your date of birth. Can you tell me that, please?
February 17th, 1903.
Mm-hmm. You had most of your education where?
In New York.
In New York.
I went to public schools 169, and then I went to Dietrichson High School.
When did you come to Bridgeport?
Came to Bridgeport the year of 1942. In fact, that wasn't the first time we came. I came looking for a house. Because you see, the war had just started, and my husband had a friend here, Joe Raines. My husband was a comedian. He was on the stage with Ethel Walters, and Joe Raines' brother was a comedian. So they knew each other.
You're speaking of Mr. Hill. Hmm? Which husband was this?
No, I'm talking about Jackson.
Oh, all right.
Oh, you're talking about Hill.
All right, then. No. It's all right. I wanted to establish which one because I haven't informed you yet.
Well, then maybe I better stay with Walter.
No, it doesn't matter.
But you, because when you said here, see, my husband had already separated in New York.
That's fine, good.
So when I came here, we were not together.
All right, so you're speaking of Mr. Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You go on and say you said he was a comedian. And,
well,
and he'd been on the stage with prominent people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then he was older than I was. And, during the Depression, it wasn't the Depression really that took black folks off the stage.
Uh-huh.
It was talk. It was movie. It was television.
Oh, that's interesting. Hmm. Yes.
See, and of course, if after television began to, the movies began to talk, and you didn't have something to offer, I mean like Bojangles, Lena Horne, and that caliber person, you just washed out. So of course, during the Depression, you see, Roosevelt, I stood online in New York City 4 years, 4 hours to vote for that man. And he really did the trick. And this is where those synonyms come from, like, you know, the PWA, and this,
yes.
But whatever work that you did, that's the work that the money was put for you to still do. You didn't have to do anything that you didn't do before. So, of course, in New York City, the actors got money.
Oh,
and in the Lafayette Theater in New York City, they had money for them to put on plays and hire actors that were out of work.
Well, that's interesting.
This was the Depression.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
And, of course, there was, well, everything was dead. Broadway was dead. There was no shows. There was no this. And when the movies came in, it just knocked vaudeville right out of the...
So he came here to work?
To pictures.
He came to Bridgeport to work?
Well, I thought he came, he was coming here to work. That's because I was young and didn't know no better. I wasn't that young. I should have known better. And then they just established the, what you call the PWA, somebody that really didn't have a trade. And instead of giving you straight out welfare, they paid you to work every day. And every Friday, that's when you got a check.
Yes. So he worked here.
So when Columbus came here, Columbus got a job over at Aluminum Company on Atlantic Street.
Yes.
I guess Columbus stayed there. I don't even remember how long he stayed there. But I know he didn't stay there too long because my husband wasn't a working man.
Yes.
And he did his thing. I did mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yes.
So, now where am I at?
Talking about your husband, you did your thing and he did his thing. He wasn't a working man.
Not physical labor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. He was
He was an elk. I was an elk. And that was his second home, with that elk.
Mm-hmm.
And along with Dr. McKell and all of them, they congregate over there and they talk. You know how men can talk?
Yes. Yes.
For hours.
Yes,
and
as much as women.
They drink their beer and talk. Yes. And then go on home.
Yes.
Well, that was the picture.
Mm-hmm. Well, where were you doing World War One?
I was a child.
That's were you in North Carolina?
Well, my mother and I was on our way to New York City, and we took a train from my home, Newbern, to Norfolk. Then you take the Old Dominion from Norfolk to New York.
Norfolk, Virginia.
Yeah.
Yes.
See, that was the Old Dominion.
Yes.
That was water travel. So few people remember that.
Yes.
But, and then we went to her friend, because my mother had a very dear friend that incidentally lived to be 100 years old.
Oh, my.
She just died here about 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, my.
You know. And, but then I was a very young teenager, so I went to school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when I finished that school, then I went to DeWitt, Harlem didn't have a high school at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to DeWitt, which was at 59th and Columbus Avenue.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how the war affected your family? Was there a shortage of food, or did you worry about anybody in the service, or was there more or less work?
Well, it was just less work. See, when you're a child, you don't realize what money's in the house because you don't know.
That's true.
I didn't have to feed myself. I didn't have to clothe myself. I only know that the money was there and that my mother worked every day.
Mm.
And that when it was time for us to have money. And at that time, we went to another St. Cyprian's Church, which I was confirmed from, in 63rd Street,
mm-hmm.
near 10th Avenue.
Yes.
St. Cyprian's. Most everybody from New York remembers
that's
that
an
church.
Episcopal church.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I was confirmed from St. John Divine Cathedral, which they're still building.
Yeah.
I was confirmed from that church.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In 1919.
Mm-hmm. Where were you during the Depression?
Mm-hmm.
Where were you during the Depression? The Depression years. Where were you?
I was partly in New York and partly in the rest of it in Bridgeport.
Can you describe Bridgeport for me during that time? Can you tell me something about Bridgeport at that time? Where did you live?
No, I can't, because you see, my father had died, and he left me a portion of money, and I bought this house. So this is our house from the time I moved.
You've always lived at this address?
Well, that's interesting. Except for 15 years, because I left my husband here. And I bought a house over on Fifth Street. And I stayed out of this house for 16 years until after he died.
But this was your original house?
This is my original house. I bought it in 1942 for $7,500.
Oh, my.
Now, that was depression.
Well, that's interesting. Where were you employed during the depression?
I did day's work.
You did day's work during the depression?
That's the work that you could get.
Yes, that's...
So there wasn't no need of somebody hanging... You know, these 12 children today, they'll say, I can't do that kind of work, and they go on relief. But you see, we didn't have no relief to go on.
That's true.
You had to get out there and take care of yourself.
How were your spirits at this time? What was your frame of mind at this time?
Just about the same. Nothing ever gets me down.
Were your friends employed?
Yes, relatives? Because we all did day work.
Can you tell me some of the things people did to survive during that period of time? I know people did all kinds of things to survive. You did day's work. What did people do to survive?
Well, in New York, they had the, that was just before I moved here, they had apple lines. People would sell apples on the street. And there were soup kitchens all over the place. Father Divine was there, you'd get a whole meal for 26 cents.
That's true, during that period. What was in Bridgeport, do you remember?
I think Father Divine was here. Wasn't he here? Didn't Father Divine have a kitchen here?
I don't know.
I believe he did. I was thinking about that the other day. I know he was here. That's not on, is it?
Yes, it is. That's fine.
Well, it was just something I was getting ready to say. I wouldn't like to go on there.
Okay. I didn't have it on.
See, when I came here, we was 42. Well, now, I think the war started in either 39 or 40, didn't it?
Yeah. 41. Yeah. The war was really started in Europe in 38, I think.
Yeah, but we weren't in it.
Yes.
We didn't get in it until they sank them.
41.
Was it the Mauritania?
No, they bombed Pearl Harbor. Talking about World War II.
That's World War II.
You're talking about World War I. We're talking about World War II.
Oh, now you're talking about World War II.
You were talking about World War II. You said you came here during the war and there was plenty of work to be done.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And see, because Roosevelt said that if you didn't hire the minorities, that you wouldn't get the contracts. So they had to hire minorities, and I was one of the first ones was hired over the United Aircraft, which is now AFCO.
Oh,
and I was a riveter. They trained me over at, and the New York people, they just poured in here. They poured. They slept in their cars. They slept in attics. They slept anywhere they could because there were shifts around the clock.
Is it
the
true?
The factories never ceased.
Is it true that they had sometimes three people using one bed according to the
three
shift they went?
Three, oh, honey, they'd be four, five, six. They'd use a shift of people that worked in the daytime, so those that worked the night slept, and vice versa. And when you couldn't do that, now people that had houses, they made money. But of course the rent wasn't like it is now, because things were very, very cheap.
Yeah.
You know. And of course, we did not get into this house. I didn't get into this house until when I got here. Let me see, March. Did we move in March? I think we moved in here in March of 42. But this house, we got this house from NIMS. I had been here the year before, but what they showed me. We're down south end, there's no bathrooms and water in the cellar and all that kind of thing because there was a, and still is, among the realtors that you don't show black people good houses.
Yes. It's Nims that you refer to Louise Johnson's father.
Mm-hmm. Yes. He's the first man we met when we came here.
Oh, that's interesting. And he was
he was a real estate man.
A real estate man. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where did most black people live at that time?
Around Lexington Avenue. Mm-hmm. And wherever they could go, just like they are now, you find black people all over Bridgeport.
Mm-hmm. Well, was there any shortage of food during that time?
Yeah, I guess there was a shortage of meat.
Shortage of meat.
More like meat.
Yeah.
And then gasoline, because you had to have gasoline stamps.
Yes.
And then they stopped having, selling silks, making silk stocking, made nylon stocking. And then you could get black market things out of there, like silk stockings.
Yes.
Somebody go down to New York and buy some. And meat. Now, there's a place up here. He was up there on Stratford Avenue for years and years and years. And of course, when we came here, Stratford Avenue is really Stratford Avenue. It was a beautiful shopping center.
Well, that's interesting.
And it had theaters, three theaters, hardware stores, three. And Ross stood there. It was on the corner for years, that drugstore that Emma Woods bought out.
Yes.
He was there for years and years. And here at the lane, right near the Montero house, that was Bisley Lane. And right on that corner was another drugstore. And Bertha Goodman and her husband, did you know the Goodmans?
No, I didn't.
Well, Bertha Goodman and her, did you know Henry Cousins, Marie Ford's husband?
No, I've heard of the Cousins.
Well, Bertha Goodman and her husband lived in the house around the corner, which is now the American Legion.
Oh, I know where that is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's where Bertha Goodman and her husband lived. And rent at that time, she paid $14 a month.
Oh, my. Mm.
So, and the people that, just to show you how cheap things were, the people that lived in this house were paying $25 a month.
In this house?
In this house. But I came back the second time because I wasn't going to put my money, and I didn't have very much. But I know that if my husband had convinced me that if we could get the down payment, we could always make the mortgage, you know.
Yes.
And we came back the second time because the first time I wasn't going to put my money into it. And so we went back to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day he said, let's go up to Groton. Somebody had told him about Groton. And so we went up there and we couldn't find anything. And we, coming on back, he said, well, let's stop by and see Nims. Maybe Nims got something by now. And so we went to Nims. We found them. And at that time, they were living on Main Street in front of Jenkins. There.
Jenkins, right.
Mm-hmm. And we found him. He says, yes, I'm glad you came. We do have something that you might want. So he showed us this house, and the minute I saw it, I said, that's all right.
Yeah.
You know. And we paid the down payment, and told the people that, you know, they'd have to move. So one lady up there said, well, she was building, the lady on the top floor, she was building, and to give her time to. So Nim said, don't do it, just raise the rent. So our lawyer was Judge Herbert Milton. You know Herbert Milton?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he was a very famous lawyer here. Now he's a jury.
I've heard, yes.
Oh,
I've
he's
heard.
Very well known mm-hmm. around mm-hmm. here.
I've heard of him. I've read about him, too.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Was it hard for blacks to find houses then?
Very hard. Because what you find was dumps. And that's why we hadn't come a year before. Because what they showed me was not like that house that the Johnsons had their barber shop down on South Bend.
Yes, yes.
That was the house.
Yes.
No bathrooms. And the water was knee deep in the basement. I said, oh, no. I know. I ain't going into that.
Then
a couple other houses that were railroad flats. And I said, no. I never bothered with that. So I went on back to New York.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then when we came through again, this one was here. And of course, we paid the down payment. Then the next thing was to get the people out of the house. So we just raised the lady's rent up to $95, and she was out in a week. That's what Milton told us to do.
This, was this an all-black neighborhood then?
Lord, no. I think we were just about the first black folks to move here.
What was the reaction of your neighbors?
Nothing. Mm-mm. And the next one was Charlie Banks moved over here. You know Sally next door, my name?
Yes, I've heard you speak of him.
Yeah. Well, Charlie was, so is Sally. The American Legion over here.
Yes.
You know, I think he was captain or something there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived there. I think, now the other end was black people, like the Brookses.
Yes.
You know, y'all know Brooks?
Yes.
The Busters?
Yes.
I think. I don't know when they came in, but I know they're there now, and I know they've been there a long while.
Was that school down there when you came here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did many people change economic status during that time? Because there was a lot of money floating around in Bridgeport.
I think they did, because I think a lot of people at that time during the war bought houses.
Particularly the blacks.
Mm-hmm. They bought houses. That house right across the street sold for $7,000.
Mm. That's interesting.
Uh-huh. And Mr. Nightingale
bought them. What about changes in social status? Did anybody change in social status? Did they move up the ladder because he had got more money during that time? He or she?
I don't think so, because I don't think I was really conscious of that sort of thing then.
What about race relations? Did they change any during the war? The people, so many people were here, people working together.
No, I think it's just as bad now as it was then. I don't see much different, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When you're black, you're black. Yeah. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said about AFCO, now, after I became active in the NAACP, and we really was very active, we fought Hubble. They had no white, no black.
That was during the war?
Uh-huh. And
did you win?
B-Chain didn't have no. Bryant Electric never hired any black.
Did you cause any changes by fighting them?
I don't know whether we did the changes or whether it was just a natural process that things had to change, you know. And then we did get more civil rights in the federal government.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you about the 60s because I know you were very active during that time, and I know you've done lots of many things within the NAACP, and I want you to tell me about some of them. I know, for example, about the busing business and you changing that, school buses.
Well, was that during the 60s?
Might have been during the 70s, but I know you have been very active all of the time, so tell me some of the things that you've done.
Well, the things that we did together, we really did them through the NAACP. And then after we got ABCD, we did them through the East End Council over here.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, a few years ago, the government cut back on the neighborhood projects. And so all of the seven neighborhood offices had to be disbanded.
Yes.
You know, those seven people lost their job. Penny Green, Francis Riccio, Rose Johnson, Gertrude Cooper, they lost her daughter the other day. and Trina Walker. Mm-hmm. But then, in some way or another, Reverend Johnson sort of kept them on and put them here, put them there. Mm-hmm. That's the way these social programs work, you know. Maybe you might not be working this year, but you might be working next year.
Yes, but you still haven't told me some of the things that you've done, and I know you have all of these plaques and medals out in your hallway, and I know you've been very active in Bridgeport, and I would like for you to tell me some of the changes that you've helped to bring about in Bridgeport.
I don't really think I brought about any change. The only major one, I think, that I was really connected with was making Geraldine Johnson superintendent of school. That was a fight. And I think that they could have really done it an easier way, because when we asked them to consider Geraldine, they wouldn't. You know they weren't going to have no black superintendent. And we had a meeting the night before up in the mayor's office. And we met with the Board of Education up there. And they had to have a public hearing. The place was crowded, and everybody talked and talked, and they begged and begged. And I forget that fellow's name now. King, who was superintendent at that time. He's very well known. And Anna Bonskane. And she cried, and don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. But anyway, they sit there and took the vote while we were there trying to beseech them to hire Geraldine. And they passed the vote that they would send an application to this man, Demetrius, down in Westport. So all of us, come on, John, let's go. And I said, I'm sorry, but you're going to be sorry. And so John and I went out in the hall, and next morning we were down and standing in front of the Chestnut Hill buses.
Yes.
The very next morning. Mm-hmm. And I was the first one down there. Took my neighbor, lady live over here, named Miss Bell.
You with J. Michael Smith too, weren't you?
Yeah. Jay was the president.
Yeah.
And Jay came, and I think at that time there was only four of us, and Reverend Roger Floyd. And
he was president of the Council of Churches.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then after the 8th grade period, wasn't either going, because the kids probably went back home. Then the next day, we had about 12 or 14 over there the next morning.
Yeah.
And we got there in time before the buses rolled. Yeah. You know. And of course, doing the stay, why, about so many thousand, boys, I think it's about 19,000 kids out of school in 2 days. And then the superintendent called another meeting of the board president of the Board of Education. And they finally offered Geraldine the job. But like I was saying to them the other day, I don't know how NAACP let you go by when you really should have had that job, and they didn't do something about it. I know that we were not functioning properly. And somebody said, well, Mrs. Johnson, they hadn't been to us. I said, well, maybe she talked to Reverend Williams. But I don't remember ever having it discussed over once or twice. This is why I was shocked.
Yeah.
Well, what you said the other day.
Mm-hmm. What effect did the Civil Rights Movement have on Bridgeport? Do you remember that? Changes in the Civil Rights Movement.
I think it did a lot for our kids. I think it did a lot to our kids in a way that they became aware of whom they were. And until a person becomes aware of whom they really are and can take pride in themselves, I think this is where they get lost by the wayside. They did not mind being black. They did not mind wearing the afro. You know.
Yes.
And I think the Black Panthers also helped.
In what way?
Well, I think because the Black Panthers were, they kept saying black was beautiful, came from there.